You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Didi pops that one into the opposite field. Ozuna's got it. Bohm's going to try it. Here he comes. And he's safe at the plate. Wow. On a shallow fly ball into left field. They roll the dice with Ozuna's arm, and Bohm is able to score on a bang-bang play at the plate. Wow. Oh, I don't know. Man, it's close. It might have looked like Bohm's foot came up. We'll get some definitive looks at it here. Does the toe just grab a little bit of the plate before the glove gets to him? And the call is upheld. The Phillies have taken a one-run lead. Oh, Brian Snicker wants to get run. He is irate. He is not accepting the decision from replay headquarters.
He probably shouldn't have, because it was the wrong decision. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Welcome in our Richmond audience now to go along with all of you listening in and around the Washington, D.C. area on 106.7. With you until 6:30 tonight. At 4:40, Doug Williams, Super Bowl MVP and Washington football team legend, will be on the show, a little over an hour and a half away. And Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports just came out with a brand new two-round mock draft. He's going to be on the show today at 6, Danny.
Nice.
We are 2.5 weeks from the NFL draft.
It doesn't feel like that, but it's absolutely true. I don't feel ready for it. I need to get ready. I need to get my mind right on this.
Kicking into overdrive.
Yeah, man.
I want to talk about replay, and I want to take some temperatures of some folks on where we're at on instant replay and video review in sports. So I am a huge proponent of instant replay, have been since day one. I think it is a necessity. I think it's vital. We need to get calls right. And the best way to make sure that we don't screw up calls, to get the most calls right, is to use the technology. Use video review, use instant replay, and if you're clearly wrong, change the call. But what happens when you're clearly wrong and you don't change the call? That's the question. Have we gotten to a point where we need to maybe bring all of the people that are smart in sports together at some conference, and every sport gets representatives, where we go over a PowerPoint to remind everyone what instant replay is for? Why do we do this? Twice this week, in the first week of MLB, Danny, twice, you had games decided on plays that were very obviously wrong that went to review that were not reversed. The first of them was the hit by pitch on a pitch in the strike zone, mm-hmm. where very clearly Michael Conforto of the Mets stuck his elbow into the strike zone to get hit, was ruled to have been hit, and the Mets walked off with a win, and then upon review, the play was upheld. Now, in that particular instance, based on rules that don't make sense, the call wasn't allowed to have been overturned in the right. sense that they were reviewing whether or not he got hit, not whether or not his elbow was in the strike zone. And the other rules that he had violated, he's supposed to move away from a pitch purposefully, trying to get out of being hit rather than doing the opposite, which is what he did to try to get hit. But they couldn't change the rule. So they knew, this umpire watching this play knew he'd gotten it wrong but couldn't do anything about it. So that rule should be changed tomorrow, but it won't. Last night was even worse than that, in my opinion. The highlight you just heard coming in from ESPN's telecast of Sunday Night Baseball last night, division game, two rivals of the Nats. Phillies were playing the Braves. Atlanta's red hot. They'd won four in a row. They were looking for a three-game sweep. They lose by one run on that play that you just heard. A ninth-inning sequence where Bohm dashes home from third base. Marcell Ozuna's got a terrible arm. Probably the worst defensive outfielder in baseball.
He's in contention, certainly, right?
I can't think of anybody worse.
Top of my head, yeah.
He's a DH playing left field.
Yeah.
But they send Bohm to the plate. He never touched home plate. As we sit here right now looking each other in the face.
Has he touched home plate?
Not yet.
No.
He was tagged out. His foot missed the plate. One of these calls that the first time you see a replay, sitting at home, eating potato chips, fat on your couch, baseball career that peaked in Little League. You see the replay the first time and you go, oh, he's out.
That guy's out, no problem.
This isn't even close. This should take 3 seconds. He never touched home plate. It's very obvious. And yet, after watching the replay for minutes, tens of times, the officiating crew comes back out. The umpires waddle back out to the field to call him safe. If we can't get these calls correct that are very obvious on replay, what is the point?
Then what's the point?
What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. There was a comment I saw last night. I think it was Jason Stark, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago. He's one of the most popular baseball analysts in the country. He said, you know, it's really tough for these umpires to overturn incorrect calls because they're saying that their peers were wrong. And so sometimes these guys don't want to overturn the call because they're making their peer look bad. I don't care about that.
I'd like to interject quickly and let you continue your thought. There has never been something uttered in the history of this planet since language was invented, since the original cave drawings, that has caused me less concern than the feelings of the arbiter of the sport.
Well, are you 7 years old? What, are you going to go run to your room and cry?
I mean, oh my God.
The point of replay is, did you get it right or wrong?
I mean, oh my God.
If you got it wrong, then we need to say you got it wrong. If there's a possibility that someone watches the replay and doesn't change the call because they might feel bad about making you look bad, everyone involved can kick rocks. The whole point of the replay is to say, hey, I got it wrong, but we've got the technology on our side now, so we're going to get it right. To say that it's hard for these guys to change the call.
It ain't hard at
all. I'm not killing Stark. I'm killing the umpires because that's actually how they think. Yeah, but we won't overturn it because then it'll be very clear that you screwed up.
And then John Hirschbeck knows he didn't get it right. I bet you John will be fine.
It's more clear now, everyone's talking about it, that you had a second chance to get it right and still got it wrong. Danny, replay is a good thing. There are detractors. There are people that don't like it. And the tough thing is that this gives them credence.
Mm-hmm.
Clearwater Revival. This gives them ammunition. And it gives them a voice to say, see, replay doesn't work. Actually, it does a lot of the time. We don't talk about the times that it works, where the call was wrong, we went to review, and now it was right. We don't talk about the times the shift works. We just make fun of when it doesn't, and we act like the shift is such a bad idea. There should be a guy there. What about the 92% of the time where it does work? I can't get over these two calls in a short span now of a week's worth of baseball. So clearly and obviously orbited wrong in real time and nothing being done about it.
Same. So where I've always stood is the theory, the idea of replay is wonderful. Because what's the point? As you eloquently said, the point is to get it right, and we can't. A bang-bang play where a guy has looked safe for 100 years, well, now we know. They tagged him on the butt before the hand got there, and it was used to be, well, he beat the throw. Now we know. We know more. We can do better, and we try to do better more often than not. Like the other day, Juan Soto was initially ruled safe. He was out. He got called out after replay. They banged it. Boom. No problem. Inning over.
Tough break.
Tough break, but that's perfect. That's the exact intended purpose. There are two things that drive me nuts. One, as you're talking about, where we go, we could see it clear as day. Actually, let me say three things. One, we could see it clear as day and somehow they don't overturn it. Two, when it's such a fine thing that maybe if you timestamp it this way and figure out on another way, it's the whole thing should take 20 seconds, no matter what. If it's not done in that time, then that to me is, we're now past the point of it having it make sense. It should be intuitive. It should be obvious. It should be easy. If it takes too long and we're sitting there 19 different timeouts at the end of a basketball game because we're trying to figure out what fingernail or what hair on a knuckle touched the ball last or whatever, that's too long. Just go. If it's not obvious, just go. The third thing is when it's so clear and we have something, but we go, well, we have this rule that's written down that says we can't change it because the side judge blew his whistle. Change that rule immediately then. The whole point of this replay system is to get it right. And you're saying, we know that this isn't right, but we can't get it right because we have a rule that says we can't get it right. Well, then fire that rule into the sun. Shoot it. Kill it with fire. Lay it outside on the ground and shoot it with fire until it dies, and then we can figure out that it's a fumble or it's not. That's what drives me crazy. And you're 100% right. It gives the detractors a replay. More ammunition than they need. And I'm going to tell you what, when those cases happen, they're so blood boiling that they've got a point.
Yeah,
they absolutely have a point.
Well, replay is not perfect, okay? It's never going to be perfect. And that is where there will always be some ammunition for people that don't like it. Because there's always going to be a call or two that isn't definitive enough, where it's going to take a little longer than it should, where you're looking for the irrefutable, that irreversible evidence that you can't get, and so you keep a call that maybe is questionable. I mean, some calls are 50-50, right? I need obviously incorrect calls to be overturned, period. Full stop, end of sentence. Nothing else to discuss here. Did he touch home plate? No. He's out. I need that to be the case. If I watch a replay one time at home, I don't have all the angles you have. I don't have everything you have at your disposal. I don't have the help of New York. I don't have someone in my ear walking me through the replay. And in that one viewing, for 15 seconds, I can see without a shadow of a doubt, without the slightest hint of trepidation, that his foot never touched home plate. And I can see that, and I would bet my life on it and bet my family's life on it because I know his toe never touched home plate. I need you to come back with a verdict that says we were wrong. He's out.
Like immediately.
It should take no time. But if it takes 2.5 minutes or 5 minutes, I don't care. Get that call right, especially in a tie game in the ninth inning, especially when it creates the scoring run, the run that puts the game into a team's favor.
Right.
It's the winning run in the whole contest. We just played for 3.5 hours. You had a chance to right a wrong. That's a tough play to call in real time, by the way.
100% it is.
This is not me sitting here joning on an umpire. He was in position. It's a bang-bang play. In fact, it looked in real time like he beat it. It just so happened that his foot kind of jammed into the ground and never touched home plate.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we have replay. This is the whole point of reviewing these calls. The human eye, at that speed, with all those things happening, you can't get that right 100% of the time. How could I possibly expect that of you? But we've got this beautiful thing now.
Ah, yes,
we've got
we
this
do.
Camera that we
all
can zoom in with,
cameras.
And we can slow everything down, and we can see what happened. Let's use that thing.
I had a coach get run because the home plate umpire said, the guy's foot, my teammate's foot, slid over home plate without touching it. Right? Similar to what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Right?
Like, it goes over in real time, but because that plate doesn't come up out of the ground like every other base where you can see contact, he slides over it. And my coach's point was, there's no way a human being could see that. We don't have the eye in the sky, the camera on the ground, the first base dugout camera, 17 different telephonic lenses to zoom in. There's no way you could know that. He beat the throw. He's safe. No. And they end up getting in that kind of fight. At that level, you just have to live with it, right? At the amateur level, you just have to live with whatever Pete Medhurst calls, right?
Yeah.
That's the deal. He brings you up. So this is what I saw. This is what I saw. What'd you see? I don't know. We'll get together. No ego. At this level, the biggest problem this sport has, and now we're being baseball specific, the biggest problem this sport has is the power of the umpire.
Totally.
They don't like something you do. They can just throw you out, and there's no recourse
for them.
Well,
and to this point, okay, so this conversation to me is not a baseball topic. This is a sports topic. Replay and instant reviews in all of sports. You can talk soccer, basketball, hockey, football, whatever. Where are you at on it? 800-636-1067. Are you still for it? Is there anybody out there that's against it that wants to get rid of it? 800-636-1067. But there is not a coincidence, in my opinion. This is not coincidental that these two issues that we're referring to were in baseball in the last week because of the egos of the umpires. I believe, and I mean this. I mean, this is, I'll go to the mattress on this. I think that you are less inclined in baseball than in other sports to overturn an incorrect call for this reason that Stark brought up, this, Well, I don't want to ding my guy.
Which I just can't have.
Because the egos of those umpires are so unchecked and so outrageous. How many NBA officials can the average sports fan name? You know, people like you and I can name a few because we watch, you know, every game or whatever. Mm-hmm. How many NHL officials can someone name, or MLB? Umpires, they're infamous more than they're famous. But these guys have websites dedicated to them. I mean, they trend on Twitter every time they're behind home plate. They make it about themselves. They're challenging players to stare downs. It's absurd. Sam is in Silver Spring on Grant and Danny. Sam, where are you at on instant replay in sports?
Sam.
You there, buddy?
Hi,
Sam.
Hey, sorry. I couldn't agree with you more. I just want to say, I think there should be replay on any 50-50 call there is. The point of review is so that you get the call right. That's the only point of it. They made it so that you get every point right. I remember a few months ago, you guys were discussing when Bruce Arians called out Tom Brady for something, that he was struggling in a certain area. And like you guys were saying, like, Tom Brady's been playing. He's a man. He's in the NFL for a reason. He's not a sensitive Sandy. It's like these umpires have two big egos, unlike any other sport. They just got to take it. The point of review is to get the call right, and there should be unlimited review for any 50 call there is.
There's a great point in there, GP, is accountability. Players have to face, and there's a reason they make so much money. They do something that no one else on earth can do, but B, they have to be accountable. You let the ball go between your legs. Why? How? Explain it. Sit there. Answer the questions. Face the music. Know that you cost your team. Know that everything is bad because of you today. You're the villain. You're going to get the blog post dedicated to you. The pudgy idiots on the radio are going to yell about you and how much you stink and how you've never been any good, etc. Accountability. The umpires and the officials don't have it. There isn't that same level. There's stuff behind the scenes. There's the occasional slap on the wrist, or there's the occasional you don't get to work the NLCS because you missed enough calls during the season, or whatever it is. It's nowhere close to the same level. There isn't that level of accountability. His point that when somebody messes up at any job anywhere, you usually have to pay for it in some way, right? If it's that egregious, sometimes you lose that job. If it's slightly bad, you go, hey, we need to correct this. Let's address this. Your bosses are able to come down on you to fix the mistake. The Major League Baseball umpires, not only do they not have that, but it's the opposite. People are afraid to come down on them. That is destructive and can't be. Just can't.
Two very different things here. Everything is reviewed and everything is reviewable. I'm not sure which he's advocating for.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything should be reviewable. The idea that certain things, that we can't actually review. That's why. Why can't we review that? So I like the idea of everything being reviewable, and you have the same number of challenges, the same number of opportunities to review. The problem with everything being reviewed is that it would just take too long. Now, if it was done correctly, you could probably get away with it, which is that if something is obviously wrong, you've got 20 seconds or so after any active moment in baseball, a tag or anything like that, where you could kind of buzz down and say, hey, this one's close, give us 5 seconds here. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time.
Yeah.
But the whole point should be stop everything until, if this call is wrong, let's get the call right.
Yeah, and the headset stuff. I'd have a buzzer. Yeah, just it gets done right now.
They all get together. They all walk off locked in arms like they're King Leonidas in a phalanx. And they, you know, they walk behind the screen. It makes no damn sense.
I hate it all.
So that all makes, it's ridiculous. It just drives me out of my mind. But it should just be everyone stays put. You got something in your ear. They buzz you and say that call was wrong. That's how you could review more things.
Mm-hmm.
To your point on umpires, they should have to answer questions. You know, when I was on the beat for the football team, if a call was blown or was obviously wrong, we were allowed to do what was called a pull report.
Uh-huh.
If you were granted access by the league, and there have been times where the league was a giant pain in the butt about that. But by and large, referees don't have to speak. You know, the guy that makes the call is not the person you get to ask the question of. It's kind of the head of the crew.
The crew chief.
Someone from the NFL rules committee or whatever. They don't have to answer to anything. And I've thought for a long, long time, you should be able as a reporter to go over and have access to the officials after the game. They officiated the game. Just like the players, as they're putting their button-down shirt on and putting their cologne on and fresh out of the shower, you should be able to put your microphone up in their face and say, hey, what'd you see on that play?
The equivalent of Angel Hernandez is a guy that hits 110 and makes an error every time he plays a game.
Never has to speak.
That guy would get sent down. That guy would get fired. Angel Hernandez sues because he doesn't get more big-time work.
The question, though, for you guys is, we know it's damaging to review when an obvious call is blown, like the one that you heard and saw yesterday, nationally televised MLB game, and you go to review to fix it, and you still uphold the incorrect call. Just craziness. But how damaging is that to the cause? And where are you right now on replay? Is it that big of an issue? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Dan.
It's clear that his foot didn't touch the plate, that it was on the chalk. Everyone saw it and sees it. You know, everyone knows it. And for MLB not to overturn that, it's embarrassing. You know, why even have replay if you won't overturn that?
Drew Smyly, who pitched for the Braves last night. I can't answer that question for you, Drew. Whole point of replay is to overturn that call that they clearly got wrong last night, and they had a chance via review to get it right, and they still chose not to. Second time something like that has happened in baseball this week. Welcome back to G&D on the Fan. We'll get to your calls in just a moment at 800-636-1067. Talking replay and where you're at on it. We're just taking your temperature. We've got years of information and data now on instant replay. And while I'm still a massive proponent, and I would certainly never get rid of it, I'm willing to make some changes to it. So we want to see what you guys would tweak, if anything. The NHL trade deadline, we told you, was at 3 today. And a lot of moves happened right before the deadline that just started to trickle out publicly within the last 15 or so minutes. And right around 3:20, we found out that the Capitals had made a trade. They're adding a veteran depth player back end of their rotation. As a forward, they're getting Michael Roffel from the Philadelphia Flyers for a fifth-round pick. This would go down as a minor move.
Yeah, what's his role?
We expected that there'd be a move. This is it. This is the minor move. It's just a depth move. I mean, his role is 32-year-old winger, 3 goals and 5 assists this year in 34 games with Philly. I don't think he plays every single night as a lock. You know, they just moved on from Richard Ponick. He's that kind of player.
Sure,
he's a back six, lefty shot. I think that, you know, he'll be in the lineup when he's going well. I think he's probably going to play more than he doesn't. But I think he'd be, you know, that, you're not going to mess with your fourth line if everybody's healthy, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd be part of a, you know, third line opportunity they're trying to put together around Lars Eller at some point. But yeah, he'll, to me, he's a back of the roster rotation type guy.
So the big question was goalie? And the answer's a resounding no, it seems like, right?
No to the goalie question and no to the everything else question.
I suppose, yeah.
It looks like, let's see, Kevin Weeks is reporting the Capitals could be involved in another trade from NHL.com. But I'm going to wait for clarification on this because this is actually a pretty substantial deal if this were to happen.
Okay.
So I want confirmation on that one because the name Jacob Vrana is showing up in that tweet. So I want to wait and see before we go hard in the paint.
That's an official Owen Wilson. Oh, well.
But this is all coming out as we speak, so we'll get to those in the coming few moments. We're going to check in with some folks with the team. Let's go to Alan in Rockville on Grant and Danny. We're talking instant replay on G&D. What's up, Alan? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, pal.
Good.
Yeah, listen, did you guys remember what tennis was like back in the 70s with, you know, people like Jimmy Connors and his epic tantrums?
Yeah, and McEnroe going nuts, sure.
It was clearly on the line. That's largely gone now because they have the camera there.
Hawkeye.
And the ref there defers to the camera, and it's close, and that's it, you know?
100%. And it's seamless now. Now, I don't watch a ton of tennis. I appreciate the call. But whenever you do, it takes milliseconds for them to get it done. And it was invented by some MIT scientists, and it's about where the indent happens for the ball and the mark on the ground, and it takes a fraction of the time that these other sports do. Now, tennis has that advantage that it's all about where the ball bounced, and that's all it takes is you sort of reverse engineering some physics and the like. You can't do that for an out-at-home plate or a bang-bang, where does Ford Progress stop it with the NFL? But advances are available to them. And rules should be thoughtful and should be written to allow for the replay to actually work as often as possible. If we can't get it right, then why are we really going through all these exercises, I think is the question.
Let's go to Charles, who's in Frederick on Grant and Danny. Charles, what are you thinking about instant replay after we're seeing obviously incorrect calls looked at and not changed?
Well, they need to define them a little more clearly, because they had one in the Baltimore-Boston game yesterday where the pitcher was totally blocking the plate, tagging the runner, and they didn't overturn it because the rule classifies it as the catcher is the one who cannot block the plate, not the pitcher.
I actually saw that. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate you. Yeah, Jim Palmer and the crew were wondering, what is the rule here? Mm-hmm. Because the pitcher comes to the plate and basically falls on top of a sliding player. Player got injured for a moment, ended up being okay. But the point was, you blocked the plate. You're not allowed to block the plate anymore. And they didn't make that call because the way it was taken on the broadcast was, I guess the catcher can't block the plate, but the pitcher, after a pass ball going back to the screen, is able to.
And it may just be sort of in the athletic moment that it happens, instead of someone standing up there, setting up camp, you know, physically squared up. But so many of these rules are inconsistent. I mean, again, when's the last time you saw the Trey Turner rule enforced as a guy that watches as much baseball as you do?
One time ever.
Yeah, I saw it that time too. Thank goodness for Anthony Rendon, by the way, bailing them out. But it's, you can watch guys on a consistent basis run inside that foul line and then kind of towards the last possible second bow out, because everyone knows it. You're faster on grass than you are on dirt. Everybody that's played baseball for more than an hour has figured that out, right? So everybody does that. And Turner was inside. He was where he should have been, and they called it. And it's unbelievable to make that call in that spot. But the inconsistent application of the rules is another thing. And if that should be reviewable as well.
What I'm worried about is, as these things pile up and the small minority, very vocal, but small minority of people that don't like replay get a little bit more ammunition and get a little bit louder saying, I told you it doesn't work, is that group starts to grow.
Yeah.
When the fact of the matter is, with the technology that we have at our disposal, replay is very successful and very good, and we should be doing it, and we should be doing more of it, but we need to figure the system out better. As an example, if I'm reviewing a play as an umpire in that Mets situation where Conforto gets hit by the pitch, if I'm watching that play and I see that he sticks his elbow out into the strike zone, I should be able, while watching that replay, to say, wait a second, the game just got completely... Right.
Forget about whether it grazed his arm or not.
Correct. He got hit. And also, by the way, I just noticed that he got hit by a pitch with his arm in the strike zone.
Yeah.
So now you're out. You, guy that just scored, go back to third, and we're going to keep playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to look at more than one thing. And if you're worried about it taking too long, you can put a cap on it if you need to. But to me, the point has to be to get the calls correct. And you can't watch a replay and say, well, I wasn't looking at it for that. I was looking for pass interference.
That's the way to quantify it.
You know, exactly. Here's a good example. In football, I'm looking at a replay after a long completion because the team's challenging that a quarterback was past the line of scrimmage, okay? I find out that the quarterback wasn't past the line of scrimmage. And on top of that, I see that there was very clear pass interference while I'm watching that replay. I should be able to legislate the PI,
mm-hmm.
because the whole point of you being under that little tent is so that you can tell us what actually happened. You now have the luxury of watching this video. JP and Louisa, you're on G&D.
Hey, what's up, guys? Big fan.
Hey, dude.
First off, I'm 100% in favor of more replays. We get the actual answers. I think with the evolution of FanDuel and the online betting and stuff, I think maybe that's going to play to our favor, that people want to get the right answers so they're not losing. But to your point with that football analogy there, the exact same thing. How have we not utilized technology to our advantage and put some sort of chip system in that ball to say, hey, did he cross the plane? Where is the spot of that ball? Did the quarterback go past that line of scrimmage? The technology is out there. I mean, I can track my 14-year-old daughter, her iPhone, to the exact spot in the house where she lost her phone. How can I not get this football to a 100-yard field to exactly where the position is? So, anyway, I'm a big fan of replay.
Yeah, I think it's a thoughtful question, and he's 100% right. I'm amazed that somehow that hasn't happened yet. Now, maybe there's something that would mess with the weight of the ball or the balance or something like that. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know. Here's what I do know. That left foot, right foot spot, or sometimes it's a yard off, but we don't care because it's the middle of the second quarter and, you know, it's the first down's good anyway, and the guy's probably a full yard shy or a full yard forward, or the official started off in one spot and he kind of bows out and goes a little further when he goes to the middle of the field to the hash mark to spot it. And you just kind of, you see it all the time, and we just kind of go, well, $15 billion business. Whoopsie doopsie. We'll just kind of keep playing here because it's just a game. It's amazing. They can't figure out more exactly.
Matt is in D.C. on the Fan. Hey, Matt, we're talking Instant Replay on Grant and Danny. How are you?
What's going on, G&D? How y'all doing?
Good, pal.
Good, good. Hey, I was just wondering, and I didn't know this, that rule. I thought that no player could block the play. But since the rule started when Buster Posey got tattooed and had a concussion and was out for however long, the rule was made that you cannot run over the catcher anymore. So my question is, if the catcher can't block the plate and the pitcher can block the plate, if the pitcher's blocking the plate, can you run him over?
Should be able to. I think anyone who's blocking the plate is allowed to be run over because it has to be both or zero, right, Matt? I mean, either a guy's not allowed to block the plate and you're not allowed to run them over, or if they are, you got to be able to truck them.
Exactly. I mean, that was my interpretation of the rule. They were trying to get the contact out because remember they had the ballpark rule at second base? Because people kept getting their legs taken out. They got rid of that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought there was no contact. So
now there is no contact. Yeah, because they got rid of the ballpark rules. His point is, for people that may not be tracking, now you're not supposed to slide in hard at second base. There's not allowed to be any contact. And you can't hook slide or do anything.
Roll blocks or any of the dangerous crap that
you basically can't
do
anything like wide of the bag. You know, Jason Wirth and guys used to go in and do a nice job breaking up double plays. I can picture him in my head. There's a million times it's happened. But where maybe you slide wide of the bag, you might grab it with your hand because you're trying to break up a throw.
As long as you're within arm's length, you were fine. But that led to some really scary plays getting made.
It looks like the Caps may have made a massive trade. May have traded one of the more popular players.
Like, wow.
We are waiting word and confirmation on this, but we should have it by the time we're back. So they got a really good player. I can tell you that. They gave up a guy that I love and that this fan base has been enamored with for years.
Legendary moment on our show.
No doubt about that. So if this is going to fruition, we'll have the word first when we come. All right, there is a ton going on right now on Grant and Danny. Beltway Blitz is jam-packed at 4, and it's a good thing because we need a lot of intel from folks covering teams. We'll get to the Nats. Their roster looks a lot different than it did 10 minutes ago. The boys are back in town. Looks like they're getting some reinforcements back off of the COVID list for the second time this week. We'll get to that in a second. I will tell you, Danny, that I was able to confirm that Jake Vrana has been traded by the Capitals. Vrana is on his way out.
Wow.
The report from Kevin Weeks, who is a former NHL goalie currently working at NHL Network, is that he is going to Detroit. The Red Wings are going to be sending the Capitals Anthony Mantha, who's a really good player, and the Capitals are going to be sending Vrana, it sounds like Richard Ponick, and first and second round picks in this deal. Now, here's what I can't quite figure out about this trade. Mantha's contract is massive.
Uh-huh.
Vrana makes well less than him.
Yep.
Mantha makes $5.7 million a year.
Yep.
The Capitals, as you know, are always right up against the salary cap where you can't take on more money. Now, they created about $1 million in space by trading Jonas Siegenthaler, and that's why I'm kind of curious to see what else is in this deal that we haven't heard of. But Vrana this year is a $3.4 million player. They're taking on a guy who makes $5.7 million per season.
So my rudimentary math tells me that's more money.
Now, they are trading Ponick with those picks, so we'll see what else is involved.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Mantha has 3 years left on his deal after this season. So this is a 26-year-old, massive, kind of physical guy who scores goals, accumulates points, offensively gifted. I'm disappointed that they're trading Vrana, if I'm being honest, not only because he's a cup hero and I love the guy. I think he's got 40-goal potential, but he right now is in Peter Laviolette's doghouse. He's He sat for a couple games recently.
Yeah, got scratched.
They're trying to motivate him to play more complete hockey. Uh-huh. He's not all that helpful sometimes defensively. But they're bringing in a guy like Vrana, who's been in the mid-20s in goals. Mantha, at 23 years old, scored 24 goals. 24 years old, scored 25 goals. And this is on a much worse team that scores way less than the Capitals, a bad Red Wings team over the last few seasons. This season, Mantha, 11 goals, 10 assists, 21 points. Vrana, 11 goals, 14 assists, 25 points. Essentially, similar players. Mantha's done it in 42 games, Vrana in 39 games. And if you're looking at time on ice, you know, Vrana has been a back-end guy at times this year when they've moved him down the rotation. So he often plays a little bit less on a really good team than a guy like Mantha might. But I think he's good, and he's huge. Again, he's 6'5". He's close to 240 pounds.
Just a big dude.
So he might be a better fit for this group, this team, what they want to be right now than Vrana.
Let me ask you this. Vrana, restricted free agent after this year.
He's a big payday dude.
And he's about to get that kind of pay, don't you think? Would he be comparable in terms of what Mantha's making, in terms of a raise?
Yeah, he'll be making that much or more. Probably.
Right, so I think that may be the thinking there, is what's more important to you, right, in terms of Laviolette's system, because he's going to be here for a couple of years, and I think they probably got tired of trying everything they could to get Vrana to get on Coach L's page, and that may be, you know, an unfortunate thing. I've got a soft spot for Jacob Vrana. I just do. I love that guy. From him pulling up his short sleeve shirt to reveal the tattoo 2 feet down on his wrist, to getting Jason Bishop throwing him a cell phone and him coming on the radio during the Stanley Cup parade. I'll always love that guy. I'll root for him forever. But, man, I don't know. It's a steep price as well, right? That first and second round pick, or am I nuts?
See, that's kind of my nervousness about this deal. If you trade Vrana in a, you know, needing a payday straight up for a guy like Mantha, I would totally understand that. Now, he's young and he's fast, and they don't have enough youthful speed on this team. So it almost feels like every time you get someone who's young and fast, see Andre Burakovsky, see Jake Vrana, well, you can't have that. You got to get rid of this guy. But I think Mantha might be a better fit for what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
First and a second-round pick, it's a lot. That's because of the controllability.
Of the term, right? The 3 years, yeah.
Let's just say they're comparable players in terms of production.
Uh-huh.
Vrana is due a big payday. Mantha's under contract, controllable for basically 3.5 seasons now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying a premium for that. You throw in those extra picks for that reason. Ponick, I'd imagine, is part of just making the money work. Not to say that he can't help a young team, but here he had just been demoted.
Yeah, he's outside looking in, right?
Absolutely.
To free up some money.
Cleared waivers, but that's just a situation where maybe you're trying to make all of the money work. And my initial reaction is this. I think for this season, this deal helps them a lot. And maybe that's as simple as it is for Brian McClellan. In the sense that...
OV, guys getting older,
exactly.
The window, yep.
You got to try to win right now, your window. You got an opportunity this postseason. There's no doubt in my mind, come the playoffs, the Capitals will be a little bit harder to play and more annoying to deal with. With Mantha's game doing what they do, than maybe Vrana's. I wonder 2-3 years from now, though, what if Jake is what I think he is? I think he could be a 40-goal scorer with more power play time. At some point, Backstrom slows down.
Yeah.
Ovechkin is not going to be your bell cow Rocket Richard winner. Wilson takes over as your captain. I've always kind of envisioned, at that time, V being your top goal scorer. I mean, you got a player back who could be scoring 25 or 30 goals at that time. Mantha's only 26 years old. Now, we think of Jake Vrana like he's 14. I mean, Vrana himself is 25. The player you're bringing in is only 1 year older. But that's tough.
So take emotion out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because obviously, it's hard for me to say goodbye to Jacob Vrana. I love that dude. Even while he's in the doghouse, I'm going, yep, it's not his fault. He'll be fine. He'll figure it out. Just the affinity I have. That breakaway goal he scored against Vegas. Some of his incredible moments.
Yeah, I'm trying not even to think about that part.
Right.
That aside, and what's the question?
So take emotion out of it. Grade it. It's gut reaction.
Oof. I like it a lot if the goal is, at the deadline today, I want to make sure we have a better chance to win the cup this year.
Yep.
I think you accomplished that.
Yeah, same here.
I'm not as convinced about a year or two from now, and I say that knowing that you just brought in a former top 20 pick who's 26 and has 3 years left of controllability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a move. Mike Rizzo always talks about, let's do something for multiple plans. The 1 year plan and the 3 year plan, and then he's got his 5 year plan.
Yep.
This satisfies the 1 and the 3 years with Mantha.
Yeah.
I think I've been higher on V than they've been for a while, pretty clearly. They parked him for two games recently.
Right.
LaViolette publicly kind of challenged him in a way he hasn't talked about anybody else on the roster.
Yeah, this is Trotz and Burakovsky. This is part two.
This is
right.
Perfect. That's exactly what this is. Trotz was good on Burakovsky. I think LaViolette was probably good on V.
So you basically say, if you're making this move or not, you're pondering it, right? You're in the room. Brian McClellan's going around the room asking everybody, what do you think? What do we do? Here's what's on the table. Here's the idea, right? You're basically going, what's our bet? Is our bet that Jacob Vrána gets right, figures it out, plays well for Coach LaViolette, they end up making beautiful music together, we get the most out of him, he's worth this huge pay raise he's about to get, or we get a more known commodity in Mantha, who we're pretty damn sure with our scouting and everything else that guy's going to fit Coach LaViolette. He's going to fit what we want to do now. He'll fit what we want to do in a couple of years.
Well, that's another thing.
Is it? You know what I mean?
There is an element of fit to this, too. Knowing the way LaViolette prefers and wants this team to play, the big, heavy, almost Trotsky and like physical game.
Right.
You're bringing in a player that is a better fit for that rugged style of hockey that he wants to play than Vrána. Average time on ice this year for Mantha was about 18 minutes and 15 seconds, whereas V was only getting 12 minutes. My curiosity becomes, how does 4 or 5 fewer minutes a night on a much better team affect him? He's not coming in here, I wouldn't think, and playing top-line minutes, which he's that kind of player, but he probably fills in a role comparable to what Jake Vrána was doing because he is a lefty shot. V is more of a left wing, I would think, whereas Mantha's more of a right wing, but some of that can be interchangeable depending on usage and when you want to throw those guys on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the numbers, last few years, they're very, very similar in terms of goals, assists, points. Vrána a year younger and on a much better team, so that speaks to Mantha being able to do that on a bad team at the same rate as V. Pretty good sign. The Nats news, by the way, we'll get this in, and then we can circle back to this in the blitz at the top of the hour, but we want to get you this. They have reinstated Josh Bell, Josh Harrison, and Kyle Schwarber from the injured list. So still no John Lester, but he's not pitching tonight anyway. So it's from a lineup standpoint where they've been shut out in 3 of their last 4 games. They now get to send Luis Garcia, Yadiel Hernandez to the minor leagues. To beat at Fredericksburg with the taxi squad and get to bring Josh Bell to start at first base back, Kyle Schwarber to start at left field back. So this will be the first time we have seen their projected opening day lineup all season if they choose to use those guys tonight or tomorrow.
It looks like a Major League Baseball roster, right?
Good.
That's the way that I would put that.
That's
here we
start.
Go. Now, I'm not going to worry about what they do tonight, tomorrow night, or even into this weekend, because they didn't play for 2 weeks, and they're riding Pelotons in their apartment. Not everyone could be superhuman.
Yeah, look at Freddie Freeman's beginning to his year last year after he had COVID, and he had a bad case, but he was terrible for 3 weeks. He texted his wife and said he might just pull out of the season. He was playing so badly. He said, I can't do this. I've never struggled like this. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And eventually he got hot and won the MVP award. So I'm not expecting Josh Bell and Kyle Schwarber to hit 600 in their first 5 games.
But you need the at-bats. You got to get to the point where you can be the guy that you were supposed to be. That starts tonight. Hell yeah.
If you guys want to react to the news on the Caps front, Jake Vrána being traded, 800-636-1067. You want to line them up. We'll get you a Beltway Blitz with some news on the Caps and the Nats as their rosters change next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.